In a stadium rich with tradition, the lights shine the brightest. This is The Camp. Now, here's your host, Zach Heilprin, on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Yes, welcome into The Camp. No game to talk about. The Badgers are on a bye, Jesse. They did practice this week. They're getting the weekend off. They'll get back to work next week to start prepping for Notre Dame, who they will play at Soldier Field on Saturday morning, late Saturday morning. Notre Dame does have a game this week. They play Purdue, who is currently undefeated. So we'll see if Notre Dame can come through that game and whether it's going to be a matchup of undefeated Notre Dame team coming to Soldier Field. And I would imagine if they do win, they'll probably still be in the top 12. So it'd be a good match, a good ranked matchup between Wisconsin and Notre Dame. But we still have some time to talk about that. We will talk about that during our show. After we talk with guys on Monday, we'll record a show again. But this show, so it's going to be a little more big picture. I do have a fun interview coming up with everyone's favorite former fullback, Matt Bernstein, my former co-host. He joins to talk a little bit about what's going on with his life, new daddy, and you know his takes on the Badger football season so far. Maybe a story here or two. But Jesse, I wanted to start because you wrote in your mailbag this week, you had a great question about what determines a good or great season when it comes to Wisconsin. And it's different, obviously, for Wisconsin than it is compared to other teams, say Ohio State or a Minnesota. I think I'm using your examples that you had in the story, so you can cut me off and continue to go on with exactly what you think is great and what is good. But and I'll let you do that because you laid out some seasons that you thought were good in Wisconsin's history and ones that you thought were great, and we differ a little bit on it, but I want to get your breakdown on what you consider to be good versus great.
Well, the headline lets you know that this is complicated. That's what the question is: what's the difference between a great season and a good season at Wisconsin? And my response was it's complicated because I was going through, I used the last decade as an example because it was the winningest decade in program history. And if you really break it down, sometimes they could win a Big Ten championship, but lose in a bowl game and it doesn't feel like a great season. And sometimes they could lose the Big Ten championship, but win a bowl game and it feels like a great season. This is subjective. So I fully acknowledge that. But what I came away with in my response was that I felt like there was only one great season in this past decade, and that would be the 2017 team. And I said that because they went undefeated in the regular season for the first time in 105 years. They were one possession away from beating Ohio State and getting to the college football playoff. And that's important to keep in mind. They did not win the Big Ten championship, but I think they validated the season by beating Miami in the Orange Bowl in a de facto road game, because that's where Miami played. They set a school record for wins by going 13-1. And so to me, that was a great season, even though there are other teams that could have potentially within the decade beaten that team. But that was the best defense. And we've talked about it before in the 3-4 era that the Badgers have had. And then right after that, in the next tier to me, are the 2010 and 2011 teams. They won a Big Ten championship. Obviously, the Russell Wilson Monte Ball team in 2011 won the first actual Big Ten championship game. But I think a lot of how we wind up feeling about a team is the ending. Neither of those teams won the Rose Bowl. And because they didn't win the Rose Bowl, I can't sit here and say those were great. And I think there's a distinction between great and very good. So again, I'm not saying that 2017 was the best team of the decade, but based on what they did in that season, I came away with the thought process that that was a great season. I mean, you would take 13-1 and a New Year's Six Bowl victory pretty much any season. And the level of expectations at Wisconsin in general have changed. And I think that's part of this as well, because winning 10 games and not doing more than that, not going to the college football playoff, not necessarily winning a New Year's Six game or Big Ten championship, that doesn't feel great anymore. And that used to. So that's the overview of the topic and part of my response.
Yeah. So where I take issue with it is the idea that a Orange Bowl win is better than a Big Ten title. You know what I mean? Like if that's a Rose Bowl title, like say they had been able to finish the deal in 2019, they didn't win the Big Ten title, but they went and finished the deal and they beat Oregon in the Rose Bowl. Mm-hmm. Then I could maybe be okay with taking that over a team that actually won the Big Ten title. I know it's maybe old school of me to think this way, but winning a Big Ten title is more important than any New Year's Six bowl game, in my opinion, because it's a season-long accomplishment. It's not a one-game accomplishment. Obviously, you have to win the Big Ten championship to get it. So, but it's a season-long that you get to that point and then you finish it off. And the 2010 team obviously didn't have to play in the Big Ten title game, but the 2011 team did, and they beat the best that was left from the other side of the bracket, even though that they had lost to Ohio State and Michigan State earlier in the year. They still had a Big Ten championship. Like, when you go and look at the facade at Camp Randall Stadium, do they I could be wrong. Maybe I've missed it, but I'm pretty sure they don't have the victory over Miami in the Orange Bowl up on the facade.
Well, yes, they have the okay. They have the Rose Bowl victories.
That's
correct.
But, and they have the Big Ten championship ones up there as well.
They do.
Okay. All right. So I'm saying, for me personally, that's how they view. To me, that's, you're putting greatness on the facade. For the most part, you're putting greatness on the facade. Now, I think one argument to that would be, in 2012, that was not a great season, but they did win the Big Ten championship because Ohio State and Penn State weren't eligible to play in it.
Yep.
That would be my one outlier in terms of winning a Big Ten title. That was not a great season. The 2 years previous to it were great seasons. The 2019 team, or I should say the 2017 team in that year was good. It could have been great had they beaten Ohio State and gotten to the college football playoff. Even if they get smoked in that, it's still great.
I completely understand and respect that perspective.
But
the fact that you're talking about a 12 game regular season, and then you've got to earn the right to go play in a Big Ten championship. This is 2011 and later, but even 2010, you played that full regular season. Although they technically tied with Michigan State and lost to Michigan State during the regular season, right?
Yes, they did. Yep. They did. So, and Mark D'Antonio is still upset about it.
So there's a lot of nuance to this, which is kind of what I was trying to make the point of in answering this question. I can't sit here and say that I look at the 2011 team had the most star power, but like, you're not going to tell me that the 11-3 team that gave up 45 points to Oregon in the Rose Bowl and lost to an unranked Ohio State team and then back-to-back weeks with Michigan State and gave up, what was it, 115 points in those three losses. Like, that wasn't a great season.
So the offense in the 2017 team struggled against good competition for the most part. Do you remember the Iowa game that year? Do you remember the Big Ten championship game? Like, don't cherry pick the end of the season, like the way that stuff happened in the Rose Bowl. Like, I can do the exact same thing with the 2017 season. Like, that team wasn't perfect. 2011, no. There's no doubt about it. But they have a banner, per se, on the facade of Camp Randall Stadium. Yeah, that's a great team.
That's what I said. It's completely subjective. I mean, the 2017 defense was way better than the 2011 defense. Just look at it. Just look at what they were able to do. And obviously, they bailed out the offense on numerous occasions because they were. If the 2011 team and the 2017 team went head-to-head, I would take the 2011 team. But that's not what I'm basing it on. I'm basing it on it on the totality of the season. And I totally understand. I mean, that's why it's complicated. Wisconsin didn't win a Big Ten championship in 2017, but you know, they beat a couple ranked teams in the regular season. It wasn't the toughest schedule in the world. They beat a number 11 Miami team and they won a school record 13 games. And I think a lot of how I feel about a team, and I think probably fans do too. I mean, I don't want to speak for all of them, but it is the way the ending happens, just like in the NCAA tournament. You could have a great regular season and earn a number 2 seed or a 4 seed, and you don't make it out of the first weekend, and that completely changes how you wind up feeling about what that team accomplished. And I feel the same way about football season. And what I'd also say is, I mean, obviously Wisconsin has built up the Rose Bowl because of, you know, what it meant for all those years ago. And when you won the Big Ten, you went to the Rose Bowl. But, you know, the Orange Bowl ain't no slouch of a game either. They're both New Year's Six games, and they played a top 12 team in a New Year's Six bowl game. That's basically the same thing you would get in a Rose Bowl situation nowadays anyway. So
I had this conversation with a former colleague of ours, Jason Galloway, who was with the Wisconsin State Journal, and he couldn't understand like the potential, like back in 2017 when they could potentially go play in the Rose Bowl for like when I think the Rose Bowl was a semifinal. I don't know. One of the years that there was a, maybe it was 2018 when it was a semifinal and he couldn't understand wanting to go out there as opposed to playing in, I think it was Georgia because that was closer and it would be better, you know, better attended by Wisconsin. I'm like, you just don't get it. You don't understand what the Rose Bowl means. And I'm not saying you don't. I think you obviously do. You've been out there. You've covered it. You know what it means. So I will but say this.
None of those teams won the Rose Bowl. That's the whole point.
Right, right.
None of the teams we're talking about.
Here's the interesting thing. And if, you know, if I wanted to torpedo my argument about the 2017 season, I would suggest to you that under the 2010 and earlier rules, Wisconsin would have won the Big Ten that year because Ohio State lost to Iowa in the regular season and would have won the Big Ten. I mean, I think they were ranked fourth.
Yeah, going into the game, they were four. So it would have been a four versus one matchup in the semi.
Yeah. So, I mean, that I'm at least, I will at least give you that. But then again, the 2010 team also would have been in the playoff at that point.
Yep.
And could have potentially, because at the time, and I know they took like 5 weeks off before the Rose Bowl, and they would have taken a lot of time off before the playoff started as well. But when they beat Northwestern, the final two games, or the final three games that they played, their offense was just on a different level. And if they had played the TCU game the week after that Northwestern game, they would have blown TCU out as well. They didn't. And they didn't win it. And obviously TCU, I think, was favored in that game. But looking at the seasons themselves, if you're just like straight up saying, you know, Big Ten championship game and you throw that out the window, the 2017 team, if it had played in 2010, that would have been a great season. Unfortunately for them, it wasn't played in the 2010 season and they did not win the Big Ten championship. They won a nice consolation prize called the Orange Bowl.
Yep. I mean,
I know you don't like me calling it a consolation prize, but that's what I'm going to say it is. Cause if they had won the Big Ten championship, they would have been in the college football playoff. And that is everyone's goal at this point. That's the only thing that matters. I think at this point is getting there. You've done everything else except get there.
Would you say if you looked at the last decade, would you say then there were three great Wisconsin teams? Would you include 2010 and 2011 and 2017 is your third team?
Yes. And I know, again, we have to cancel out 2012 because it was not a great season, even though they won the Big Ten championship. It would, for me, it would go 2010, 2011, and then 2017.
Well, obviously, we put stock in different things. And I think winning the Rose Bowl completely changes how you feel about a lot of teams, because I remember writing a column about this going into the 2019 Rose Bowl, that team that had lost three games. My argument was if they would have beaten Oregon in that game, it would have been the second best season in the past two decades since the last Rose Bowl win that Barry Alvarez had with the 99 team.
And you know what? I could get on board with that. What I'm saying is I will take a Big Ten championship over an Orange Bowl or any other New Year's Six Bowl game except the Rose Bowl. If you go out and win the Rose Bowl, it's different. Because guess what? That also goes up on the facade. That means something at Wisconsin. Winning a Rose Bowl means something. And if you don't win the Big Ten, but you can win the Rose Bowl, it wasn't possible before. But yeah, that is more significant than a Big Ten championship and losing the Rose Bowl.
There's a couple other things I want to say on this topic that I mentioned in my response. I do think that because of how long it's been, and we're going on darn near a decade now since they won a Big Ten championship game. We've seen Wisconsin consistently win 10 games. I do feel like if they were to win a Big Ten championship now, that it would feel more significant, that it would make you feel like that was a great season because you've had to wait for it for so long. And I don't know, you know, I don't know how valid that argument is, but I do feel like that. Like, it's a different landscape in college football now. You've got a dominant Big Ten power in Ohio State, and you haven't been able to beat them in a decade. Let's just say Wisconsin was able to beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship, and they did go to a bowl game and lost that bowl game. You know, I might feel differently about what a great season looks like because they just haven't been able to get there for so long. So, you know, I think that's part of the argument, too.
I agree.
I mean, and the last point that I wanted to make, which I think it goes back to the heart of the question about good versus great. On the whole, Wisconsin's program, I think you can say the envy of most programs in college football, clearly, but since Paul Chryst was hired in 2015, they've got the ninth best winning percentage in the FBS, and they're the only program in the top 10 that hasn't won a conference title or reached the college football playoff in that span. And I think that speaks to that, like, good no longer feels good enough, but great really hasn't been achieved. And yes, Ohio State is a significant reason for that. But I think that's interesting. I think Wisconsin is in a unique and interesting place in the college football landscape right now.
Going back to your point about it being so long, and obviously the time between the 1963 Rose Bowl and the 1994 Rose Bowl is one thing. I mean, that's 31 years, and no one ever thought it was going to be possible because of how horrible they had been in that stretch. Obviously, it was 5 years between that and the next one. But then, you know, and from 99 until 2010, 2010 was special. Well, it was. Like, it was really special. Like, people were excited. Like, I was at that Rose Bowl game, and there were a ton of Wisconsin people. It wasn't on the level of 94, but it was a huge, huge turnout and a ton of excitement because of what that team had done. So it had been 11 years, and it have been 11 years this year, right? So, yes, I think that if they somehow figured it out, I don't know if either one of us is in the camp of thinking that's going to happen. Maybe we can talk about that in a minute. But if it were to happen, I think the excitement would be high. But you're right, the college football playoff has also changed a lot of things. If you win the Big Ten but don't get into the college football playoff, like Penn State in 2016, it may lose a little bit of its luster. But in my mind, that would be a great season. Anytime you win the Big Ten, it's a great season. That's just in my when they win the Big Ten, assuming there aren't two teams ineligible to play in the conference championship, it's a great season.
I see your perspective. I would say that you got to finish the deal, and there's a distinction between a great season and a very good season. And you can have a very good season and win the Big Ten and still lose three games. But I think we're at an impasse, but
no, it's all good. It's a great conversation.
Yeah. Like I said, from the outset, it is complicated. I really think it depends on your perspective, and everybody has a different perspective on this.
Do we want to dive into whether we think they're going to be able to figure this out? And it'll,
why not?
Yeah,
let's bring it back to the present.
We can do that. Obviously, it's two games. You don't want to overreact to what happened in week one or week two. Look, I think the defense is good enough to win the Big Ten.
Yep.
I've had this conversation with a number of people, you know, over the last couple of weeks, you know, doing interviews on the radio. And I do. I think that they are good enough to win the Big Ten. Now, have they been challenged a ton to this point? No. They had obviously the mental miscues in the first game. And I think certainly you would be worried about their pass defense being able to hold up. Certainly the 2017 team with Nick Nelson and Derek Tindall as the corners, I would kind of feel better with those guys out there. You know what I mean? But this front seven is as good as they've had. And I think on the back end, they'll figure things out. So I think the defense is definitely good enough for them to win the Big Ten. I'm not sure the offense is ever going to be at that level. Because if you think about, I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but I think we have, because we've talked about Quintez Cephus and his impact. That offense in 2017 was not great, but it had a great player in Jonathan Taylor and a really, really good player in Quintez Cephus until obviously he got hurt against Indiana. And even after that, their offense was still pretty skilled. But I would love to have seen that Ohio State game with Quintez Cephus in the lineup. You know what I mean? Like him and freshman Danny Davis and A.J. Taylor, the way he was playing, and even, you know, throw Kendrick Pryor in there. I would have liked to have seen what that looked like. Maybe Wisconsin gets over the hill. I mean, they had 43 yards to go. And Quintez was not the Quintez he was in 2019, but he was still pretty darn good early in 2017. The first eight or nine games that he ended up playing. So, but this team does not have that. And I, at running back or at wide receiver. So even if Graham has to be better than Alex Hornibrook was, and do we think he can be that at this point? I don't know. And that's kind of scary.
Yeah. I'm not going to say he can't be that yet, but he hasn't. I mean, you can go back now, and he had 7 touchdowns, I believe it was, no interceptions in his first two games. That was last season against Illinois and Michigan. And since that time, I believe it's 2 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. That's over the last 7 starts for him. That's hard to ignore at this point. And as we said last week, he didn't have to do much in the last game against Eastern Michigan, but they're going to have to show it at some point. And I think I'm with you right now. It's really hard to say that this offense, I mean, what have we seen to show that they're at a level that you think they can win the Big Ten? They ran the ball very well against a mediocre team. I think Chez Malusi shown he can be a pretty darn good number one. He's averaging 5.2 yards per carry, but what's that look like against a really good defense? And does it even matter if you don't have a passing attack? Well, the answer clearly is no, because we saw that against Penn State. So, yeah, it's a great defense. I mean, it's shaping up to be an elite level defense. They're third in run defense right now. They're giving up 1.83 yards per carry. That's exceptional. And the front seven clearly has a lot to do with that, but I don't know. I need to see it once from the offense for us to move this conversation forward. That seems like a reasonable request.
I would agree. Now, the question I think remains is, how good is Penn State's defense? Do we know how good they are? Because if we think that they're a very good defense, well, then what other teams is Wisconsin going to face with a defense as good as Penn State? Certainly not Notre Dame, at least what we've seen through the first 2 weeks. I would not put them anywhere close to where Penn State is. Michigan has been solid, but I don't think so. Maybe talent-wise, maybe they're on Penn State's level. I mean, the only team that you would say would be Iowa, right? Iowa, yes. And that is, what, 5 games away? They got 5 games before Iowa comes to Camp Randall on October 30th. There's certainly opportunities to figure this out and get an offense that you feel good about going into that game, but you're right. You have to see it first. And, you know, maybe they can get healthy against some of these other teams defensively. But right now, Iowa is my favorite to win the Big Ten West. And I don't know exactly what's going to change that through. I mean, you know what will change it? Iowa will lose next week and I'll have egg on my face. But right now, they've been the most, I think, out of all the Big Ten teams, they've been the most impressive.
What'll change it is if Wisconsin wins the next 5 games. They roll through Notre Dame and Michigan and Illinois Army and then Purdue and go into that Iowa game. That'll make me feel like maybe they are the best team in the West and they can go prove it against Iowa. But you obviously put yourself behind the eight ball by losing the first game of the season. That's a Big Ten game. And especially in the way that they did, it makes you question everything. 1 week maybe is an overreaction, but I don't think so in this case.
Here's the thing, though. Obviously, it wasn't good in the red zone. It was pretty good everywhere else, wasn't it? Like when you think about what they were able to do against Penn State, they moved the ball, but in the red zone, it was ugly. But say they score one of those touchdowns. Say Graham Mertz doesn't. Say Caden Lyles doesn't false start. Graham Mertz doesn't put the ball up on Chez Malusi's shoulder. You know, like those two plays or those two opportunities there, they go the other way. Wisconsin wins that game, and we're talking, I think, slightly different about what this offense is. But unfortunately for them, that did happen, and we have to take it into account. So the offense, I think, can be good, but it has to prove it first because we didn't see it in fall camp, and we haven't seen it through 2 games, I don't think, really, truly, against a good opponent. They didn't do it against their defense. They didn't do it against Penn State. They did it somewhat against, obviously, an overmatched Eastern Michigan team. But I think Notre Dame is not a great defense, but they're certainly better than Eastern Michigan, and it'll be a big test for them.
Yeah, for sure. It's a results-oriented business, though. I mean, if Graham throws a touchdown pass to an open Chimere Dike on the last possession and Wisconsin pulls out a 17-16 win, yeah, we're talking about things differently. But even then,
of questions.
Well, yeah, they wound up with 359 yards of total offense, but I mean, it's not like they averaged 3.8 yards per play. And even when you looked at the running game, Malusi ran for 121 yards, 3.9 yards per carry. That's nothing special. So, yeah, they moved the ball and the time of possession was clearly skewed to Wisconsin. They wound up having it for 42 minutes and 24 seconds. So they did a lot of things right. But I mean, again, results oriented, you get inside the 10 three times and you come away with 0 points. Yeah, it changes things. But like even if they had won, it wasn't like the offense was on fire. But being 2-0 and the team that's in the top 6 at this point or 8 or something like that, yeah, it'd be much different.
It wasn't as bad. Like what I'm saying is it wasn't as bad as the scoreboard looked, right? Like they did move the ball. They had some success. They just couldn't finish when they needed to. And again, as I said, we would be talking about this no matter what, because it wasn't great. even in the second game, it wasn't great. We would talk about it no matter what, but I think it'd be a lot easier for fans to talk about it if they were 2-0 as opposed to 1-1.
For sure.
You know,
no disagreement here.
Yeah. So we're going to get to our picks in just a second, but first, my conversation with Matt Bernstein, former Wisconsin fullback. And we do bring in a very special guest. It is Matt Bernstein, former Wisconsin fullback, former co-host of the camp. Matt, thanks for jumping on.
Man, I would do this for you any day of the week.
So, I wanted to catch up, man. What you been up to? I know, obviously, last time we talked, you were a new dad. You're still a new dad, essentially. What? Your daughter Mabel just turned 5 months?
5 months.
That's insane. So what's it been like, man? I mean, you obviously love being a dad, but it's crazy, isn't it?
It's absolutely bananas. I equivalate it to like going to the seminary and being at football camp for 5 months. Like, you know, your schedule is not yours. You have been now put on the baby schedule. You're constantly like, okay, I got to clean bottles. I got to make sure that, you know, everything's ready. We have enough formula. We have enough diapers. The diapers are ready. It's just nuts. But on the flip side, like as much as I love football, that's how much I love being a dad. And I couldn't be happier. You know, my daughter cracks me. Everything she does makes me laugh. Even if she has no, she even stares at me like I'm an idiot when I'm laughing at things she does. So like, I love it.
So who is the Barry Alvarez of your life then?
Oh, you know who that is.
That would be
putting one other person here.
I was going to say, how is she doing though? Like, I mean, does she, you do everything that she asks, right? Al, your wife?
I mean, I still try to negotiate, but I mostly break. you know, right now we're watching four shows and one of them is my show.
Okay.
So that's where we're at. But she's a great mom and like helps me so much. And honestly, I don't remember half the things that we're supposed to do. And she's like, oh, did you grab, like, we got to change the diapers out of the diaper bag because we just upgraded from twos to threes. I mean, yeah. This is the stuff we're doing right now.
See, but it's so important, man. That's
really
stuff,
important,
you know, right? Like, that's awesome that someone you have someone you can lean on.
Yes, it's fantastic. Listen, a blowout in a two when she shouldn't be wearing a two becomes like a mess everywhere.
I bet.
It's happened. So,
like, two, 3 years ago, could you imagine yourself in this spot?
Oh, my God. I think that's when we started the camp. I would say probably not.
Yeah. Because I couldn't. You'd show up we'd show up the studio and you'd be like, oh, man, rough night last night. Like,
it was a Sunday at like 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning.
It was. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. You know, hell, everyone enjoys a night out. Bernie. And
I mean, I love doing it. It kind of felt like it was like drinking three cups of coffee coming to talk to you.
Yeah, I bet.
Great.
I bet. yeah. So but you're also you're out in New York. You guys bought a place out there, right?
Yep. We got a small condo. Yep.
Yeah. And well, isn't every condo in New York small unless you make $500 million a year or something like that?
Pretty much. Ours is 1,000 square feet and I love every square foot of this place.
It looks nice.
Except for my bathroom. It's okay.
Oh, so you got, well, at least you get your own bathroom.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's like the guest, you know, the one that everyone uses, but
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And then, so you're also, what is going on at work now, man? Obviously, you know, you're enjoying your time out in doing that.
Yeah. I feel very fortunate. I get to work for the University of Wisconsin. Raising money for them and UW Hillel is under the umbrella. So it's just fantastic. I get to live in New York. I talk to, you know, alumni from all over the East Coast, but all over the country. And that to me is really cool. Sometimes it's hard for me to wait until like 11:30 noon to start calling people on the West Coast. But outside of that, I mean, I couldn't be happier working for a place that like is probably my favorite place in the world.
How excited are people when they get to talk to you though? I'm excited right now. Like, I mean, for me, and we're doing this early for me, not so early for you because you have a baby and you're up at all hours, but we're doing this early and I'm excited. Like I couldn't sleep. I was excited to be able to get a chance to talk to you this morning. So are people excited to hear from you?
You know, I think so. I mean, it's still kind of like a sales position where you're like, you know, kind of cold emailing people and cold calling, which, you know, some, I think eventually, yes, people figure out like, oh, you play football. That's so cool. Hey, can I take you on tours? Can I do these things? You know, like you kind of have to get through like the initial to, you know, the services I think I can provide are much different than a lot of other people's. So I think that's special. But, you know, on the flip side, and I think that's what I love about this job is, you know, if I see somebody walking in the street with a Badger hat on, I go up to them. Hey, yeah. You're a Badger? That's so awesome. Like, when did you graduate? Do you have a kid there? Like all these things. And so I'm excited to talk to these people and hear about people's experiences and what they did when they were on campus. And, you know, it's just every year is so different. So I just really enjoy that. And, you know, there's, so I had a dinner with a parent actually here in Westchester, and their daughter's there now and walks up to the Hillel and says, hey, do you guys know the Hebrew Hammer? It's like, I like love that. You know, like let's, you know, the legend lives. It lives on.
I was going to say, like, how do those cold emails start? Do you know who
yeah,
I am?
Yeah, they start. I am the Hebrew Hammer. You need to talk to me.
Yes, exactly. Do you remember that Penn State game of 2004? Remember that
There's
guy?
A lot
Remember that guy jumping over people?
I'm not going to lie. I do send that link
to
a lot of people.
Yeah, I bet. This is me. But hey, that's a great way to get their attention.
You know, any which way you could do it, that's what I find.
Yeah, I can't do sales. I could never do what you do. Like cold calling just scares the heck out of me. Like I would, because I just feel like, because honestly, and this has, you know, I'll say it, I hate when people cold call me. Like, screw that. Like, no, I don't want this and I don't want that. And emails go unanswered and calls go unreturned. Like, that's kind of who I am. But that's not you. You're a people person. You love talking to people and getting to know people and finding more out about them. That's the only way that you even, I mean, like, you had no idea who the heck I was when I asked you to do the show. And you're like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll do it for sure.
Yes, I'm very open. That's for sure. I am an open book. But yeah, the emails are hard. You know what? I always try to throw something in. Like if I'm emailing someone from Chicago, I'll say like, hey, do you remember this pizza place on this street? Man, I used to go there all the time. So I've had people just answer one question and it's like that intro question. You know, like, oh, have you ever been to like Wando's before? Yeah, I love Wando's.
Yeah.
So you know what? Even if you don't give me any other information, but you got back to me, I guarantee at some point down the road we'll have a connection again.
Yeah, for sure. So you're in New York. You do get to come back to Madison at times. I know you took your daughter to Camp Randall. Speaking of Wando's, took her to Wando's. Is it more enjoyable than coming back, like than living here? Obviously, which you did before you guys moved out there. Is it more fun coming back and getting to experience kind of like a homecoming? However often you are back.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's difficult because there's so many people I want to see, and it's so hard to do that. And especially with a baby, it's even harder. But yeah, we did the tour of Camp Randall. We did Wando's. We did the Union. You know, now she's. I'm already emailing admissions, trying to get her into whatever class in 18 years she could get into.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's really special. To me, it's really special to take, you know, my daughter who I. You know, three, four, five years ago, when I was living in Madison, would have never thought that I would have taking her to all these, you know, places that were so meaningful to me. And as much as we joke about Wando's, that place is meaningful to me. I met my wife there. So yeah. My daughter, you know, is the sum of all of that.
Well, that story is going to be great to tell her at some point, right? Yeah, or is that at some point, like, 17 and a half years down the line, like when she turns 18 or, you know, a little bit older or no?
You know, I have to believe that if she's like me and my wife, she will not be really caring about the drinking law age.
Okay.
I just, right. That if I had to take a guess, I hope she just waits until at least I did.
Okay, and when was that?
I want to say I think I was 15.
Okay,
so I'll wait for you know, I think I could do that.
Well, it's a good thing she's not living in Wisconsin because she would have started slightly earlier than that.
Yeah, oh my god,
and you would have too.
He just turned 10. Congratulations!
parents taking you into bars and stuff. Yeah.
Get over here and shotgun this beer.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously you love all the things, and obviously there aren't great things. You talk about a blowout and not the type of blowout we saw last week with Eastern Michigan and Wisconsin, but yeah, you talk about that. Like, what's the thing that you're least looking forward to? There's so many great things about being a dad, and there's going to be so many great things about growing up and all that type of stuff. But
I can tell you right now, I mean, it's daycare cost.
Okay. Really?
Oh my God. It is the amount of money you spend on a human being that cannot have a conversation with you is mind blowing. It's just like, I get paid and I'm like, okay, here goes all of it to daycare, all of it to diapers, all the formula. I mean, I love to do it, but
no, you don't. You know, like, who loves to spend money on that type of stuff? Like,
I mean, a lot of it too. You know, it's funny. I'm like, honey, we just got to make it 2 years and then daycare costs like drastically declines. She goes, what happens if we have another one? Oh. And I was like, oh, mind blown. I'm like, 4 years of daycare costs. Dude, it's almost as much. It's $1 under my mortgage.
What? For a month?
For a month. That's $1. It's insane. It's actually, now that I just think of this, it really cuts like a knife. Thanks a lot, Zach.
Yeah, you're welcome. Oh, man. That's...
Oh, God. I can own 2 condos.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's really difficult to think about.
Maybe $1.90. It makes me feel better.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into some things that are going to be a little bit more enjoyable than thinking about the cost of daycare, which they're here everywhere, just exorbitant. All right. So Wisconsin football through 2 games, we've seen some bad in the Penn State game. We've seen some good most of the Eastern Michigan game. I know that you thought that they were going to go 12-0 before the season. We talked before the season.
Always.
And that's the thing. You always think they're going to go 12-0. How disappointing, or I shouldn't say it. I don't want to have a leading question here. Has it been disappointing for you to this point of the Wisconsin football season? Like what you were expecting coming in compared to what you've seen so far?
Well, I mean, I'm not disappointed. I mean, obviously when you lose, I don't feel great about it, but you know, I always thought, and I think everyone did, that Penn State game was going to be a big game. You know, it's going to set the tone. They were not going to come in here and just, you know, roll over for us. And we played okay. You know, on defense, we dominated. On offense, we had the ball for 43 minutes. Like, how do you lose that game? But we gave up, what, 3 big plays. So am I disappointed? I mean, I'm disappointed in, like, those, like, little things that, to me, is not – the character of Wisconsin football. I was a little disappointed in our offense. I thought we'd be a little bit more ahead. And then I really thought, I mean, Eastern Michigan, if we couldn't win that game, like we don't deserve to be on the field. And I thought we should have scored 40 something points on them. So, you know, like you're still seeing mistakes. So I guess that's a disappointing, right? The mental mistakes and the small mistakes. But on the flip side, I did see a huge jump from the offensive line and some of the other things. So, you know, like you need the Eastern Michigan games for a team like ours, I guess an offense like ours, to kind of limp into the season. And we didn't have that with Penn State. But I think it'll only make us better. It gives us good game film to really sit down and like, you know, unpack.
Well, it does. And Jesse and I were talking about it here earlier in the show. The fact that they were in the position to win that game, like they just make one less mistake on offense, whether it's a false start on Caden Lyles or whether it's Graham Mertz putting the ball on Chesham Lucy's shoulder. Like you're a running back. That ball was in a bad spot, right? Like,
yeah.
As a running back though, do you like, I still have to, it's kind of like a wide receiver dropping a pass that was behind him or a little higher to the left. You still have to make that play, right? Or am I wrong there?
You know, Coach White always preached like these huge pockets, and we would make, and you remember, you were, I think you would remember, like I would joke around to make these ridiculously huge pockets,
yeah,
you know, with my arms, my elbow up as a joke. And then you do it so many times that it's like, you can't undo it. So you're now attuned to the quarterback can put it in different spots, but your pocket is so naturally big now that it can go in a lot of different areas. but it can't if it's hitting your shoulder pad. You know, like that's and those things, you know, we were talking to Gary Ellison and it's like he was a running back, obviously. And we're both like, it's just mind blowing that these things are happening. You tripped, you know, I'm sure it happened, but I don't remember a quarterback tripping a running back in a long time. Like you practice these things over and over and over again, hundreds of times. So you talk about disappointing, like those things hurt as a running back to watch. You know, I think I remember like one game, like remember Sorgi against Ohio State but it was a center quarterback exchange. It was raining, like there's a little bit of an excuse there.
Right.
And it was supposed to be, the ball was supposed to be given to me and I would have scored a touchdown and went crazy. And
you guys won the game though.
So it doesn't matter, but you know, those things, weather is different, you know, and I think there were some weather issues, but you know, it's hard to watch, you know, two fumbled, running back exchanges that can't happen. And I think that's really one of the reasons we lost the game.
No, definitely is. When you go 1 for 4, like they did inside the red zone, and it wasn't just the red zone, it was the low red zone. Like it was, inside the, I mean, they had first and goal from inside the 2 twice and they didn't score on either of those possessions. Like, so that hurts. But you were saying in terms of things that happen, like usually it's the quarterback getting stepped on by the lineman. We saw that against Iowa in 2015 with Joel Staube. You know, the guard stepped on him. Staube tried to still hand the ball off to Taiwan Deal. They fumbled right on the goal line. Like that to me was kind of reminiscent of what happened against Penn State, but there was no offensive lineman to blame this time.
Yeah. I mean, those things sadly happen, and they're, to me, those are once, like that was 6 years ago,
yeah.
7 years ago, 7 seasons. Like that's, to me, that's a fluke. You know, you got a lineman trying to get out of the box to pull. On the flip side, once again, this happened numerous times. So it's not like it happened 7 years. Like, this happened 3 times in the season in 2 games. And those are 3 plays in really important areas of the field. So,
And I kind of feel like at Wisconsin, the minimum that you should be able to do as a quarterback is hand the ball off. Like that should be like the absolute bare minimum of what you should be able to accomplish. And like the thing is, Graham is such a good kid. Like he owned all those mistakes. Like he owned all everything that happened. I feel like that only goes so far though. Like, yeah, we appreciate, I mean, like teammates, we appreciate you owning all those mistakes, but you gotta stop making them.
I mean, do you think the defense is so pumped about owning those mistakes when you can't put up points? I mean,
no,
the offense is the reason they didn't, well, they technically get a shutout, but untechnically, whatever that word is, we gave up 7 points, and that has nothing to do with the defense.
And that wasn't Graham's fault.
No. I'm sorry. It wasn't Graham's fault. But if you're on the defense, you're like, guys, you're in the red zone, can't score. Like we are a top 5 defense. We're probably top 3. We're some of the best. We're the best defense. I mean, if in the Big Ten, and if you guys can't score, we're going nowhere. Now, all those guys are going to play on Sundays, but I mean, you can own it to a point, but you're right. You know, you really got to lock up the mistakes. And you know what? We can talk about it, but if you make that mistake in the red zone against Notre Dame, that's an unforgivable mistake at this point. It's the 3rd game. We have a bye, so you're running these plays 1,000 more times. And this is on a big stage. You know, like this is Penn State on steroids to me.
Well, yes. I totally agree. Does it get in your head?
You know, I actually really like Graham. I think he has potential through the roof. And there's a lot that I like when I see. He just looked uncomfortable in the Penn State game, like in a lot of it, different areas. And then in the Eastern Michigan game, he looked more comfortable. So maybe it is like, you know, he's trying to do too much and he can just take a step back and be like, we got guys. Like, we don't need to go, like, I don't need to be the guy who does every single thing. So hopefully he can just settle down a little bit. I mean, I really think when he figures it out that he can just do his job, he'll be fantastic.
So when you had a chance to come back and go to practice during fall camp, right? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think you see a 1 practice?
Yeah, I was only there for 1.
It felt, and like, we only got to see, I think we ended up getting to see 8. It never clicked in fall camp for maybe outside of 1 day And it kind of, I kind of feel like it has dragged into the regular season with the offense. And I don't know why that is.
You know, I don't know why that is either. But once again, I think my friend Mark Zalewski said it. He's like, we did something we've never done. We got a five-star quarterback. And we all thought he was going to come in and be the next Russell Wilson from the get-go. And then compounded with that Illinois game. You know, how many games has he started? 10?
He's got 9 starts, I believe. They are 5-4 in those starts. And he is, I believe, undefeated when he doesn't throw an interception and winless when he does.
I mean, those are some pretty solid stats to be going off of, honestly. But, you know, I just think it's inexperience. You know, it was a weird year last year. You know, 9 starts is not a lot of. If you go back and watch my first 9 games, I look like a mess out there. I mean, I just put my head down and tried to blow people up, but I was missing blocks. I look like what I say is a Fagawi. I look like a jabron out there. So, you know, like I can't fault him. He's the quarterback, and he needs to know 1,000 other things. But there is a time when you say, okay, something needs to click that you need to start like actually doing this. And I think it can only throughout this season, I'm hoping we can see him grow into that player. But I do think there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders from all of Wisconsin and all the alumni and the fans that think he's Russell Wilson 2.0 as a freshman. And that's hard to live up to.
And it's not something that he wanted either. Like, it's not his fault that he was really good in high school and ended up being ranked, you know, so highly, and that everyone put all their hopes on him, and that he, you know, broke a record at the All-American game, like for touchdowns. It's not like he didn't do that. And it's not his fault that he played against a crappy Illinois team and lit him up. But that probably was the worst thing to happen for him, was that Illinois game. Like, say he only throws 2 touchdowns and he looks good. He has a few more incompletions. Maybe people don't have those on top of the recruiting expectations, don't have the what they see in their mind is just unreal, ungodly talent. There weren't a lot of big time throws in that game because there were guys running open all over the place. It was kind of like the Eastern Michigan game. There were guys everywhere. I'm wondering if you were in the locker room, And maybe you've had this experience at some point. Like, are you upset with the quarterback? Are you doubting the quarterback? Where is your mind? Because we talked to those guys and like, all right, Graham's our guy, all that type of stuff. But if you were there, like, you would be saying that, but what would you be thinking?
No, I'd probably be thinking the same thing. I mean, you know, on some level, I'm sure he's getting coached just as hard as everybody else. You know, like, you make a mistake, everyone's on you about it. So I'm sure that's happening. And I think it's probably 10 times worse for him because of all these things that we just talked about, that it's, you know, like one little mistake everyone looks at and goes, oh my God, how could he be making these mistakes? But what is he, 19 years old? Like, he had a COVID year, was crazy. Like, nothing is normal about his kind of career path to this point. So I don't know. I'm trying not to make an excuse for him, but you know, he definitely has it in him. I just think he's take a step back and, you know, enjoy it, have fun, and, you know, like just go through your progressions, get out of the pocket, like just chill out and play football and have a good time like you did in high school.
Yeah, for sure. When you're watching these games, and we've had some people ask about this, but I thought me and Jesse could have talked about it, but I thought you might be a better person to ask about it. It feels like, just like looking at the offense, we know Paul Christ, right? Like, we know that it's a lot of eye candy, moving guys around before the snap. I'm saying, like, a lot of pre-snap motion, you know, making the defense make checks, make the defense, you know, get their eyes in the right place, and that all that type of stuff. It feels like, at least through 2 games, there hasn't been as much of that than there has been in previous years. I'm wondering if you noticed that at all, and perhaps a reason for it.
Oh my God, have I noticed it? Do we run a gap zone scheme all game? It's like the only play we run. I mean, I'm sure we run other plays, but I feel like we do the same things over and over, and they're very vanilla. You know, Zach, you tell me, have we thrown the ball down the field 1 time yet?
Certainly didn't against Penn State until late in that game. They threw, I think Graham took one shot to Danny down the sideline in this one, but no, for the most part, they have not at all.
Right. And we're running outs and slants, which I actually think are very important, but what defense should respect our big play potential, our long throws? You know, you want to open it up for Jalen Berger and Chez and all these guys and Garendo. The box is stacked against us. You know, it's easy to go against Eastern Michigan. You know, these guys aren't the caliber of Penn State, but, you know, you're looking at Notre Dame. These guys, the caliber of Notre Dame is pretty high. So, you know, we got to find something. I know Coach Chris, you know, if you ever watch like any time, who was the fullback who I love? Brady Ewing.
Yeah.
If you ever watch like that offense, it was spectacular. Like the guys were motioning. I mean, I just watched Brady because he was a fullback. You know, he was everywhere. He was lining up as a slot receiver, an actual receiver. He was motioning. He was, you know, I think that is what I'm expecting. And with what I'm seeing, it seems like we're not playing to everyone's potential. And Graham is a perfect, you know, person. If he's uncomfortable in the pocket like Penn State, why not roll him out? Why not get him outside so he can see something a little different than, you know, Penn State helmets in his face. So I feel like maybe we've been vanilla just because it's like the early in the season, but we got to do some more stuff. We have to open the playbook up or else we're in trouble.
Well, I guess I just don't. And Paul was asked about the pre-snap motion after the Penn State game. And he was just like, what we were putting together, the game plan, this is what made sense. Like he wasn't going to give us an answer that anybody actually wanted to hear. You know, I don't understand the change, and I don't know who to talk to understand the change, because it's either Paul or nothing. We don't, you know, Joe Rudolph, I guess you could say, was demoted this offseason. You know, in terms of just his titles, he's no longer the offensive coordinator, which means he no longer has to talk to the reporters before, you know, during the week, which, you know, and he was obviously kind of a lifeline, because, you know, for all of Paul's all the good things that he does and all the positive things he does as a head coach, he's not exactly always, not even just forthcoming, but helpful in terms of understanding exactly what he's doing. And that's completely fine on his part. There's absolutely no reason to do that, but it's always helpful to, you know, get the perspective of a head coach or of an assistant coach or something like that. And right now you just don't have that. So I don't know why they haven't been doing what you just talked about. Like and if it doesn't happen against Notre Dame, if you don't see the things that we've seen in the past, then you're just like, well, what changed? Why?
I mean, if we don't see the playbook opening up and doing different things, I don't know what that means. I mean, it's scary to think that that could be a potential. The past two games, that's what it looks like. We're going that way. But I have to believe that, you know, we are in the like meat of our season.
Yeah.
Coming up. And if we can't find some big play potential, some big play, you know, people, if we can't throw Kendrick Pryor the ball down the field at least once or twice to even stretch the defense, we're going to be in trouble. You know, Notre Dame is no joke. And yeah, they haven't played any like fantastic people, but they're scoring points. And granted, they have to go against our defense, which makes me very happy. But eventually, we have to score points. We have to move the ball. And from what's been trending is the red zone offense, you know, some of the big mistakes and penalties. If we can't, I mean, you can't win with those. You can't win with turnovers. And it's very uncharacteristic of the Wisconsin offense to me. So I'm hoping that, you know, we have a bye, we clean it all up, and we come out on all cylinders. People, I mean, maybe the team needed a loss and they needed to just, you know, get into Eastern Michigan and then get out to have a bye to say, hey guys, you got to put your helmets on and buckle it up, because we're really getting into, you know, like our season to potentially go to the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Notre Dame game is going to be, I think, telling. We'll see what happens with them this week. They have not been impressive in their first two games. They beat Florida State in overtime by 3. They beat Toledo by 3. Jack Cohn, speaking about tough guys, getting his finger put back in place and throwing the winning touchdown on the next play. The offense has looked solid. That offensive line, not very good at all. He got sacked 6 times, but they're 2-0, and now they play Purdue this weekend. But when it comes to Notre Dame and it comes to Jack Cohn, put yourself in his shoes. how jacked up is he going to be to play Wisconsin after they decided to pick? And I, to me, it was the right choice. It remains the right choice, even through what we've seen of picking Graham Mertz over him. How jacked up is he going to be? I know his family is going to be jacked up, like his father and his uncle. Like, I just based on the way that they have always that they've been like during his time. But Jack never doesn't seem like that type of guy. He's a nice kid, but put yourself in his shoes. What is he thinking in that next Saturday when they play in Soldier Field?
I mean, what is he thinking? Oh man, he's thinking that he wants to destroy Wisconsin to score 60, 70 points for him to have 5 touchdowns. I mean, if he dislocated his elbow, he'd still play in that game.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I have a lot of respect for Jack. I mean, it was a very interesting, I want to say transition or whatever we're calling it. But, you know, like he did a lot of good things for Wisconsin and I thought he was a great quarterback. And, you know, we recruited a 5-star and maybe there would have been a battle if he, you know, when he got hurt and he came back and maybe they put him in when Graham wasn't performing as well as we thought he should. I thought there could have been something there that, you know, might have flipped the switch for Graham to be like, man, I got to really work, you know, to get this job back. So, you know, but that's in the past. But if I'm Jack Cohn, man, the guy transferred to Notre Dame to be their starting quarterback. He was a good quarterback. Yeah. I'd be jacked up. I'd be ready. I would be, you know, telling my guys like, dude, do this for me. Like, I need you guys more than anything. I'm nervous in Jack possibly being the X factor in this game.
Yeah. He is a talented quarterback. I will say that, and I talked about it a couple of different shows, but I don't know what Jack Cohn would have looked like without Quintez Cephus last year. Because Quintez Cephus was a difference maker. And you can throw Jonathan Taylor in there too. But in 2018, when Jack Cohn didn't have Quintez Cephus, he wasn't very good. And again, first-year starter. So, like, I wasn't expecting him to come out and be, you know, hair on fire, lighting it up. But it would have been interesting in 2019, Jonathan Taylor, Quintez Cephus. Like, he had two huge difference makers to be able to get the ball to. I would have been interested to see what it looked like last year. Now, I know there are people out there that will say they wouldn't have lost a couple of games. Like the 3 games that they didn't score at least 10 points, they wouldn't have lost those games because Jack wouldn't have made the mistakes that Graham did.
Sure.
Whether he would have or not. Right now, he's got weapons that Graham Mertz does not. Like the weapons that Notre Dame can throw out there are better than what Wisconsin has, at least at the receiver spot. So I don't know what Jack Cohn would have looked like, but listening to you, it kind of sounds like you think that they should have gave the job back to Jack Cohn as opposed to Graham Mertz.
I don't know if I would have given it back, but I would have definitely, you know, thought that there might have been some type of competition or something. You know, Graham, the season, was it last year? Yeah, it wasn't, you know, like it wasn't spectacular. So I thought they would maybe throw him in at the end. Now, I don't know all the politics, what happened behind the screens. If Jack was like, listen, I'm going to transfer. I don't want to get in the game. Or, you know, like, I don't know what that looked like.
Yeah.
So I can't speak to that. But in sitting on a couch, drinking a beer, looking, going, hey, Graham's struggling. Maybe we should switch it up a little bit. Put a guy who, you know, did a lot for us, played a lot of games, has that experience. Let's see what he can do. You know, like, let's see what he can do. And not saying he still wouldn't have transferred. But I think it forces you to really, like, I don't know, light your hair on fire and get you know, get your stuff together to be the starting quarterback. You know, when that happened, you know, in 2002, they're like, Bernie, you're going to be starting off of you know, the spring games. And I really did well in the spring games. And then I came to the season, like, you're playing dudes who are, you know, Penn State, Ohio, you're playing dudes, like, these guys are 5-star recruits all over the place, you know, and I thought that season really helped me get to where I needed to be. But Coach White was like, listen, we're going to mix Russ Coons in. And Russ Coons pushed me. Eric Bickerstaff, those guys pushed me to be like, dude, you got to do better. You got to know what you're doing. You got to block better or else you're not going to play. So, you know, having those guys on the team who were older, who had played in games, you know, that really pushed me to really make sure that I was buckled up every single rep Coach White noticed. you know, or Barry noticed. So, you know, I think there is some of that that could have happened. Listen, it just didn't. I don't know. I don't know what happened in Jack's camp. I don't know what happened with Coach Chris and the rest. I can't speak to any of that. I'm just speculating, or, you know, like when you assume something, you make an ass out of you and me. So yeah. I don't know what that looks like. I just thought that the competition could have possibly helped Graham in the long run.
Yeah. So you are going to be in Chicago for the game. Ooh,
yep.
How excited are you for that?
Jack, I cannot wait to be in Chicago. You know, it'll be a work trip for the first few days, and then, you know, going to the game, wearing all my Badger stuff again, obviously my Welcome to Fullback City shirt, who I called them and asked them to be a promoter for them to get a little, you know, an extra side biz. And they said they don't need help. I was like, you guys don't, what do you mean you don't need help? I brought the last three shirts from you guys. Don't tell me that. I'm super pumped. I cannot explain like what a 7 a.m. tailgate means to me, you know, to go to the game at 11 o'clock, like Fox, I hate you, but I'll be there at 11. And you know, just the excitement of being in a stadium again with other people. And then if we win, because then it's exciting after the game. You lose, people are like, where's my plane? Like, let me get out of here.
Right.
So
where's my plane?
I got to get on the plane.
You flying in private? You're bringing,
dude, I'm the most
bring your jet in
class. they like put me in the seat in the bathroom. That's how basic coach I am. They won't even let me wear a jacket.
Yeah.
let alone carry something on.
Right.
yeah, man, I do not. I've never been on a private jet. I'm if anyone's listening, please, you know, I'm happy to do it.
Be more than happy to take a ride on your jet anytime.
Listen, I'll tell you stories all day on the jet if you want.
What's the first you're on the jet? What's the first story you tell?
Oh, my God. None that I would ever say on the radio or on a podcast.
Do you have when you're going through your stuff, do you have a go-to story that is PG friend, or like
everyone asks about the Penn State game, you know, the drinking with Herb Street and Fowler, like those are all great. You know, the one where Zalewski, Herb Street's like, dude, I'm going to tell the nation you're slow. Like all those are pretty solid. Like people love that. They're names that people know.
I actually have not heard that one.
Oh, it was at the end of the night on after Penn State. I was drinking beers with Herb Street and all those guys, but then I left. And I guess Zalewski was a few beers deep, many, many few. And he goes, Herb Street, you're only on the radio because you're pretty, or you're only on TV because you're pretty. And Herb Street just looked at him and goes, I'm going to tell the nation you're slow. And it was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Was that the night that he puked at Wanda's?
Herb Street?
Yeah.
I don't think, maybe. I don't know. I wasn't there. I have no idea.
All right.
Probably.
All right. Yeah.
He probably had three beers and he probably threw up.
Probably. Those Ohio State guys can't handle it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they can. I remember you saw that another, we went out, you know, like you go to Chicago. It was me, Brett Bell, and Joe Thomas. And I was like, man, this is our last night, but you had to be up at like 6 a.m. to do interviews. I was like, but anyone could do interviews hungover. So, and Brett and I were pretty much wild animals, and we just forced Joe Thomas to come with us. and then we forced like a lot of the other guys to just meet us somewhere and drink beers. And it was, what was the center's name who played for the Jets for forever?
Mangold.
I actually like, he was a nice guy. I think it was him. Who else? It might have been I don't think it was the linebacker. I think he was gone already. The guy who played for the Packers. I'm blanking on all these names. But we were just, Brett and I were just chugging beers. We're buying rounds and people are slow sipping. And Mangold's looking at me like I'm a complete animal. And I'm like, man, I'm like, this is Big Ten football. You know, like I'm like the cliche, like, douchebag of the group, but I've never had so much fun. And then, you know, just Brett and I, and, you know, could do, you know, Joe Thomas was like sipping beers too, but I wouldn't, you know, he was that guy. Like I didn't need him to go crazy. And, you know, you wake up at 5:30 to put your suit on, and it was a struggle, but man, it was a great time.
Was this Big Ten Media Days that you were at?
Yeah. Big Ten Media Days.
Yeah. Yeah. we got the, what year did we do it live down there? 2018, I think. Is it 2018 that we did it live down there?
Yeah.
And we went out the night before. We kind of went out, went to the hotel bar. I was a little hungover the next morning. You were not, but I was.
Somehow I've become very good at being able to put a few away and wake up like no issues.
Yeah, I think you were up and out of the door before I even got up, like before my alarm even went off. And
when you guys showed up, I had drank two bottles of rosé.
That's true. I was like, you weren't there when we got there, and we walked in and there were these empty bottles of wine. I was like, what the hell is? And I had to text you and be like, what'd you do? And you're like, oh no, it's no big deal.
You guys showed up like, well, you guys were arriving later in the day, and I showed up at like 11 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was, that was great. So you are, in terms of score next weekend, what do you got? You got Wisconsin getting this done. I know you're not going to pick against them. So, what do you got?
You know, it's going to be something like a 30. Well, hopefully maybe it's like a 28-21 game, 28-24. It's going to be tight. 31-28. You know, I think it comes down to obviously turnovers and special teams are going to be super important in our O-line. Pass protection and running the football and then on offense just doing a little bit different stuff.
I'll just put it out there. If Wisconsin doesn't turn the ball over, they win the game.
Yeah, but that's every game, I would say.
Well, under Graham Mertz, yes, that's been the case. But, yeah. Like in exactly. terms of if he doesn't throw an interception, I guess I haven't gone back and looked at the fumbles, but like if he doesn't throw an interception, they win the game. And yeah. and I think Jack Cohn's probably going to have a nice game, but I like Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin defense, very, very good, plenty good enough to win the Big Ten. It's going to be about the offense coming along and, as you mentioned, knocking out those mistakes and
right.
playing complementary football. And by that, I mean, don't turn the ball over. Don't put your defense in bad spots. And I think you're going to be in good shape, not just this game, but for the rest of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost willing to say that I think our defense has a chance to score in this game. So
Jack Cohn has, you know, he turned it over twice, including a pick six last week. I think we're going to see a lot of Tyler Buchner, the freshman quarterback that can run, because that offensive line, we saw it against Toledo, saw it against Florida State, wasn't good in either game. I don't think they're going to be able to hold up against Wisconsin's front seven, Wisconsin's been able to, you know, get after the quarterback to this point. So, and stop the run. I mean, they've been dominant in both spots. So we'll see how it goes. Maddie will be there. The Hebrew Hammer will be in attendance in Chicago. Certainly appreciate your time. Every time you come on, love having you on, love seeing you, your face, and hopefully we can talk soon.
Dude, I love it. On Wisconsin, like, let's go out, let's go to Chicago and just beat some tushies. Now I'm a dad, I say tushies. Let's go whoop some ass.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
And that was Matt Bernstein. Certainly appreciate his time as always. He's always welcome around here. All right, time to get into some of our picks for the weekend. Again, remember, you can go to betus.com and put in the promo code thezone125 and get 125% sign-up bonus. Again, that's betus.com. All right, Jesse, we did not do great last week, or at least I didn't do great last week, but we did get the cover on Wisconsin. So that was,
I feel good about that. I almost nailed the score. I know only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, but I missed it by 4 points. I had 38-7.
So, and it ended up being,
I'm patting myself on the back, 34-7.
If not for Chase Wolf, man,
well, you got to count on something bad happening.
All right, let's get into the picks. We'll start down in Oklahoma, a matchup of two former Big 12 teams, also Big 8. Teams, Oklahoma, number 3 in the country, hosting Nebraska. The line, Oklahoma by 22.5, over under is 62. Scott Frost said, we got nothing to lose. Just go down there and play free. No one's expecting anything out of us. And I would totally agree.
You could have given me any number on the point spread, any number, and I would have taken Oklahoma. So I'm going Oklahoma, 62. Woo. I'm going to go the over on that bad boy. I mean, Nebraska scored 52 against Fordham, so maybe they'll move the chains. You never know.
Fordham. How bad was the This was obviously against the, in the Penn State game, but the guy putting up the wrong scores on the scoreboard.
Oof, that's brutal. Right. And he had all the Camp fans Randall. Thinking that Fordham was blowing out Nebraska. And what was the other game?
Western Michigan and Michigan.
Yeah.
And I tweeted it out. I was not even thinking about it. Like, oh, biggest cheer ever. And then be like, yeah, that's not true.
Yeah. You had one job, scoreboard guy. Sorry if you're listening. I'm really sorry.
That was bad. That was bad. Like, it's no, Jesse, it's one thing to get one score wrong, but to get two scores wrong and in such ridiculous fashion, I think maybe it was a plant. I don't know.
It was wishful thinking, maybe.
Yeah. We'll go down here to number 8, Cincinnati. They are visiting Indiana. Indiana, obviously, in that opener against Iowa, did not play well. They lost 34-6. They came back and took care of Idaho last weekend, 56-14. Cincinnati is favored in that game. They are favored by 3.5 points. The over-under, 49.5.
Yeah, I'm going Cincinnati in this one. Ah, boy, oh boy.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
This is a tough one. It's at Indiana, though. Ah, man. That home field advantage.
Yeah.
Everybody well knows known. About it down in Bloomington.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Indiana. I like those points. I mean, Cincinnati's right. beaten Miami and Murray State. So what do we really know about them?
Well,
I know Indiana got dominated by Iowa, but that Iowa team is the top 5 team in the country, man.
It so was 30. I'm 34-6.
Yeah. I'm still on the Michael Penix train.
Yeah, I know you are. You're a big fan of him. I'm going to take Cincinnati.
All right.
Yeah, for sure. And the under. No. I'm going to take the over.
Oh, I didn't take half. One.
Yeah, Cincinnati and the over.
I'm going the over on as well.
All right. Moving on, we've got Michigan State. A mild surprise to this point. Really have looked good in their first two games. Taking on Miami. Miami is a 6-point favorite in that game. The over-under is 56.5. Michigan State has took Northwestern to the woodshed to an extent, 38-21, then came back and beat Youngstown State 42-14. Mel Tucker, the former Badger, has him playing well. Miami blown out in their opener against Alabama, but who doesn't get blown out in the opener against Alabama?
Tell me the spread again.
It is 6. Miami is favored by 6 this game at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens, Florida. Looking to be warm.
Michigan State. I want Michigan State. And
it's a noon kick, man.
Oof. Miami beat Appalachian State 25-23 last week.
Appalachian State, not bad.
Still, you're Miami. You're the U.
The U.
I don't know. 6.5. It feels good to me. You know, ultimately, right. That's what this stuff comes down to. And what's the over under? If I have my listening skills are great, then
56.5.
I will go the under.
So you're taking Miami and the over.
I'm taking Michigan State.
Oh, okay.
The under. All right. And the under.
I'm taking Michigan State as well. We're on the same page here. I have not liked what I've seen to this point out of Miami. And again, it's Alabama, but then it's also Appalachian State. So I'm kind of surprised that they're still ranked. Michigan State, on the other hand, as I said before, has looked quite good in their first two games, even though we don't know how good Northwestern is. Going to Northwestern and winning, as Wisconsin fans know well, not easy.
Not easy.
this is a big one. Purdue
yep.
heading to Notre Dame to take on the Fighting Irish, who are 2-0. They have won their first two games by 3 points each. They beat Florida State in overtime and then needed a late Jack Cohn touchdown pass to beat Toledo last week at home. Notre Dame is favored by 7, and the over-under on this one is 58. I will say this, Jesse, just in case this will somehow affect your thinking. Purdue's band going to be without the world's largest drum versus Notre Dame. First time since 1979. The drum, too big to fit through the Notre Dame Stadium visitor tunnel. So they're going to be without their big drum on Saturday afternoon.
That's an incredible nugget. And I'm glad you threw that out there for everybody.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Notre Dame not doing the job and Jackie Heisman going out there. And you know what I think is going to be interesting is we might see like a straight up 2-quarterback system with Notre Dame now.
Might. I think we
are. It's not the Jack Cohn show anymore. So I'm really interested to see what happens in the game and what Notre Dame's offense looks like. But give me Notre Dame.
Favored by 7, over under is 58. So you're taking Notre Dame and the over?
I'm taking Notre Dame and I'm taking the over. Because we don't know if Notre Dame's defense can stop anyone. So
we don't think they can. And I'm yeah. And David Bell threw two games, 14 catches, 255 yards, three touchdowns for the Boilermakers. But you're right, Jack Cohn has thrown six touchdowns these first two games. He was also sacked six times against Toledo. That offensive line, not good. So I'm actually gonna take Purdue here.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna take Purdue and the under on that one. Moving on here, Jesse, we've got Auburn and Penn State. It's the big one in the Big Ten. Auburn number 22 in the country, Penn State number 10. Penn State's a 5-point favorite in that, the over-under 53. Obviously, Penn State has already beaten Wisconsin. A win over Auburn would be obviously a huge one. They took care of Auburn, played Akron, beat them 60-10, then played Alabama State and beat them 62-0. They've put up 122 points through the first two games and given up 10.
Yeah, this is a really tough one, but I feel like Penn State, State College, night game, gets crazy out there.
And got the whiteout going.
We've already seen what Penn State did against Wisconsin, so how dare I besmirch the good name of the Nittany Lions this season. So I'm taking Penn State.
Taking Penn State and the over, I would assume, right? Like 53? When you see Auburn putting up 60 points in back-to-back games. Yeah.
I'll take it.
I guess we'll see how good Penn State's defense is, huh? Again, the two teams that Auburn beat, Akron and Alabama State, not exactly world beaters on defense, but that's still 60 points in back-to-back games. And we'll close with this one, Jesse, the big one, I guess, for the entire country. It is Alabama traveling to Florida. Florida's number 11 in the country, Alabama number one. Alabama has rolled in their first two. Florida has as well. And what does Alabama, the number one team in the country, going on the road to face number 11 Florida, get? They are favored by 14.5 points, and the over-under is 59.5.
I'm still going to take Alabama, man. Bryce Young has been
insane
good. He's completed 71% of his passes. He's got seven touchdowns with no interceptions. He's worth that $800,000 or that $1 million in NIL money, it seems.
He definitely is. That game in the swamp, 2:30 kick. I would love for this Penn State Auburn game to be in November.
Oh yeah.
And have them come up as opposed to however warm it's going to be. You know, I think it's supposed to be 80, but it's going to be a night game. So it's probably not going to be too warm down there. I would love for that game to be a night game in November, Auburn coming up instead of playing. Cause you know, the SEC, like at least they used to, they play some of those cupcake games in November. I think Alabama's played like Southwest Technical State every year before they play the Iron Bowl. I'm probably a little off there, but it seems that a lot of the SEC teams play some of those down teams later in the year for whatever reason. And it's because it's obviously because they start the season, or at least they have in the past, with conference games at times. You know, the Big Ten is starting to do that. And that's kind of why you're seeing Wisconsin playing Army in October, whereas most of those games usually are in September. So
what was your Alabama Florida pick, by the way? Did I miss it?
I'm taking Alabama and the over. For sure.
I don't think I gave my over under. What was the number again?
58.5, I think.
Yeah, I'll go the over. Alabama and the over.
People are just going to be yelling at their phones. It was 59.5. I apologize. Still over?
Yeah, give me the over. And we all know what difference one point can make. And people were sweating on that Eastern Michigan game.
Ooh, they were. That guy almost caught the touchdown late.
Oh, yeah. Bad talk about a bad beat. It would have led Scott Van Pelt's show, you know?
It would have. Yes, it would have. Because, like, Wisconsin had given up 50 yards to that point, and they gave up 40 yards on that drive alone. Most of it coming on that long pass that because they had a lot of backups. And we go with Amon Williams. It was an Amon Williams sighting in the end of that Eastern Michigan game, along with Ricardo Hallman. So we got to see a couple of the young corners that are behind the youngest corners behind the young corners behind the older corners. Either way, Wisconsin off this weekend. We will be off as well, but we will be back Monday afternoon. Get you ready for Wisconsin and Notre Dame at Soldier Field. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is, Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp here on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.